Hello and welcome back to Sharp Scratch. Today you're listening to episode 108, Meet the Multidisciplinary Team. This is a podcast brought to you by the BMJ, where medical students, junior doctors and expert guests come together to discuss all the things you need to know to be a good doctor, but that you might not get taught at medical school. My name's Eva, and this year I am working at BMJ as the editorial scholar, looking after all the content that BMJ student will be producing this year. I'm also a medical student at Lancaster University, taking time out of my studies between my third and fourth years. Today, we're joined by our panellists, Anna and Judy. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, hello guys. My name is Judy. I'm a fourth year medical student at the University of Silesia in Poland.
Hi everyone, my name is Anna. I'm a first year obstetrics and gynaecology trainee in the northeast of England.
Lovely to have you both on today. And I'd also love to welcome our expert guest today, Sam Holmes. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. My name's Sam. I'm a speech and language therapist by background. I've worked in head and neck cancer for the last 10 years. And I'm currently on secondment to the BMJ working on sustainable healthcare.
I'm so excited to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us. So in last week's episode, we delved into teamwork in healthcare, discussed what makes a good team and what makes a good leader within a team. I thought this week we could explore the dynamics of the multidisciplinary teams that come together to look after patients when they're in hospitals and in the community. Previous episodes, including one that Anna has hosted, have explored interdisciplinary teamwork from the perspective of medical and nursing students. And I thought today that we could broaden our horizons a little bit more and try to understand just a bit more about the workings, the inner workings of the multidisciplinary team. Sam, in your life outside of the BMJ, you are a head and neck cancer specialist, speech and language therapist who works within a multidisciplinary team. So I just thought we could start off by hearing a little bit more from you about your experiences of working within the MDT.
Certainly, yeah. So as I said, I've been doing this for about 10 years within head and neck specifically. And one of the things that drew me to the specialism actually was my experiences of working within the head and neck cancer oncology MDT. It is one of the most functional and enjoyable MDTs I have ever worked in, and that's been consistent across my career. I think it's partly because it's a big team. There's lots of different roles. There's, you know, you've got the ENT consultants, maxillofacial consultants, you've got nursing staff, AHPs from a lot of disciplines, dietitians, speech therapists, physios, occupational therapists. You've got the nurses, you've got inpatient, outpatient teams. It's a huge and complex team, but everybody's role, and I know this is quite a cliche, but everybody's role within that team is absolutely vital to the care of the patient, which is why we're all there. And I think having my role within that MDT recognised and valued has brought me so much job satisfaction, and actually I think allows me to be better at my job. I think the head and neck MDT really, it's quite culture dependent. There's a really strong culture of working together and valuing everybody's contributions, and that's really, yeah, it really adds to my enjoyment of the role.
Oh, I'm so pleased to hear that you're in a team where you're valued, and I would hope that everyone feels valued. I think that makes such a difference no matter what team you're working in. In my own experiences, obviously a lot more junior than yourself, I've always found oncology MDTs to be really inspirational, both.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's interesting that I didn't know that you were a head and neck speech and language therapist. Before I started my training in obstetrics and gynaecology, I did an ENT rotation as a foundation doctor. So I worked, obviously at a very junior level within that team. And it was exactly as you said. I think I'm sure it's a different area of the country, but all the people that go into that team to making an outcome that is acceptable for patients. And I think especially with head and neck, particularly if it's affecting the way that you eat, if it's affecting the way that you communicate with other people, those are the two sort of key things that we get enjoyment from as human beings. So being able to have that team in place to facilitate a way forward for those patients, I think that was one of my favorite things about working in Nose and Throat.
That's so lovely to hear.
Yeah, okay. But it was such a great experience for me, you know, as someone who knew that I wasn't going to be going into that area of medicine. It was really, really interesting to get that experience. And I think there was definitely sort of transferable skills, you know, into my role now as part of a very different multidisciplinary team, but one that's still, you know, needs to function in exactly the same way to have patients at the center of what we do, right? So I think what's possibly unique about my specialty is that we obviously work with midwifery staff who are members of the MDT, who I think have a very defined role, and particularly very experienced midwives are, you know, the sort of bedrock of our MDT in maternity. And I cannot tell you how much, you know, even in, I've been training now for nearly 6 months, so not very long, how much I've learned and been facilitated to learn, particularly by our band 7 midwives who coordinate the labor ward. And you know, from an education point of view as well, you know, I know that that's the person to go to. And I think that that's something that maybe we don't talk about as much, because we do, I think, talk a bit about how valuable the MDT is for looking after patients. But as a medical student and a junior doctor, it's super valuable to learn from members of the MDT and be facilitated to learn the things that you need to know from members of the MDT. And just having an understanding of their role and the training that they go through to be in their role. And I remember the episode that we did before with the nursing student, it was so fascinating because I had so little interface with other allied health trainees when I was at medical school. I know other medical schools are a bit better at doing sort of multidisciplinary training, but it's so interesting to hear about the similarities and differences. And my sister's a nurse, so I was at medical school at the same time she was at nursing school, and yeah, I've become really interested actually in the differences between medical training and other allied health professionals, to the point where I'm doing a, Eva and I are involved with a study about it. So it'd be interesting to see what the results are of that.
I think on the point that you were talking about, Anna, with the MDT sort of not being as emphasized in medical school, that's definitely something that I wanted to kind of touch on as well, because I find that as a medical student, we're not currently like getting a lot of experience with other MDT members. And I think it's quite important because, you know, medicine is a very like team-based and in the future we'll be working as part of a team. But in medical school, it's almost kind of we're taught as like lone wolves. So we're kind of being taught how to do things by ourselves, even just things to do with like case scenarios when we're studying. We're being told, you know, this patient's come in, or labs have showed, or the cells look like X, Y, and Z, and we're not being sort of told, like, you know, maybe potentially the scientists that work in the lab have actually brought this back. So we don't think so much about the people who are actually bringing us the information back. What I found was when I went into sort of more clinical rotations, or when I had my summer placement, I was quite surprised because there was a team, and I was quite used to the idea that potentially I would be working very much, you know, on my own if I ever like went, when I do become a doctor, particularly when I was on placement in emergency medicine, I had this idea. And I think maybe TV shows don't help that much either, because they have this idea that doctors are kind of like doing everything themselves and they're like super focused on the doctors. But when I went into emergency medicine, I could see like there was like a whole team. Like there were aspects where the foundation doctors would, you know, go off with patients and do their investigations, but then they would also come back and speak to more senior doctors. So that's something that I wasn't quite anticipating. And even in medical school, it's not as like talked about the idea that we are working as a wider network and we're not just, you know, doing stuff on our own. And then also the idea that, you know, for me, I didn't know a lot about the MDT. I didn't know a lot about other professions outside of maybe being a doctor or being a nurse. When I was working as a health care assistant, and when I was working in a vaccination center. I was fortunate enough to be working with a lot of members of like allied health professionals, and it was really interesting because I was hearing of terms that I had never really heard about in medical school. I had a colleague who was a health visitor, and in our conversation, I kind of like, she said, oh yeah, I'm a health visitor. And I was kind of nodding along, and she was like, do you know what that is? And I was like, no, I don't know what that is. And she kind of explained to me that, you know, she's seeing young children between the ages of 0 to 5. And I was quite surprised because pediatrics is one of my favorite fields, and I didn't know anything about health visitors who are so, so involved with young children. So I do think that that's definitely a gap somewhere in our curriculum where we should be learning about the potential, like the people that we will be working with in the future.
Sam, does any of that resonate with you? What was your training like? Did you learn about other kind of allied health professionals and medics and nurses?
I'm in a slightly unusual situation, and just a bit. And I studied in New Zealand, and I moved to the UK immediately upon graduation. So I never actually worked in the healthcare system that I trained in. But I mean, 15 years ago, I have to think back. But I don't think we, similarly to what Judith's saying, we didn't have a lot of exposure to other healthcare professionals. I remember being absolutely terrified of doctors when I first started working, and. Yeah, I think in each area that I, you know, worked in and got experience in, I had to learn from the ground up about who did what, and the degree of people's expertise, I think, was what I really had to get my head around. You know, the different professionals that work in a team will have such specialist knowledge about things that, you know, you might be aware of, you might be completely unaware of, they might be completely without, you know, outward of your own experience, but drawing on that knowledge is so important because it's there to make sure that the patient gets better care. So why not use it? I had to laugh when you were saying about the TV programs showing, you know, that the doctors do everything. I remember watching Grey's Anatomy, and I think it was, you know, Meredith conducting some sort of bedside assessment of somebody's cognition, or, you know, myself and some of my friends all screaming at the TV like, that wouldn't be a doctor doing that. And I think it's very simplistic for the point of a story, but, you know, there are people there to support, you know, the work that's being done. And it is frustrating to sort of, healthcare can be quite reductive sometimes in the media as well. It all comes down to doctors and nurses, and the rest of the professions do get a little bit forgotten. And so that can be a frustration for quite a few allied health professions. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's so true what you were saying. I remember when I first became a doctor, and I was an F1, and I think I was very aware, like, obviously because my sister had been a qualified nurse for 2.5 years by the time I became a doctor, even though she's, you know, younger than me. And I was quite aware of, I really wanted to make a good impression, particularly with the nursing staff. And, you know, I didn't want to rub anyone up the wrong way, or, you know, be, I don't know, seen as that doctor who like doesn't come when you're called or whatever. And it was only about halfway through the year that it occurred to me that some of the newly qualified nurses might find it quite nerve-wracking to bleep me and speak to me on the phone, because I was like, you know, it's just me, like I'm friendly, that's fine. But then when I spoke to some of the newly qualified nurses about it, and I don't know, I think it just sort of slightly shifted my frame of mind about things. And I mean, I'm not, actually, people might not think this is true if they've listened to me on this podcast for a while, but I would consider myself to be not a massive complainer. So I'd always think, like, you know, I'd rather go and people have that support, even if there's not an enormous amount that I can help with, than, I don't know, get a bit shirty with people over the phone, because I just don't think it's a very nice way of conducting yourself, I guess. But yeah, now when I think about these little band five nurses and band five midwives, and they're like just newly qualified, and they're probably really nervous to call the doctor. So I always go round, like whenever I'm on call, I go round to all the wards and say hello and introduce myself and stuff. And it sounds a bit trite, but I think it really does make a difference. Like
it does. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I think on the other spectrum, actually, because we don't have as much interaction with other healthcare professionals, there is the tendency for there to be like stereotypes some of the stereotypes I've heard of, like, you know, maybe nurses don't like, you know, junior doctors, or you know, they're not going to be as welcoming towards you or as warm towards you. And like, whenever I find myself in those conversations, because I work as a healthcare assistant and I work with nurses like all the time, I'm like, you know what, guys, that's actually not true. Because we generally don't have as much interaction with them, we kind of have this fear that, okay, maybe they won't like us when we get there. And then that immediately affects the way that you're going to behave, you know, when you actually are working, because either you're super conscious about everything you say, or because of the negative sort of stereotype that you've heard.
I think you've tapped into something really interesting there, Judy, and I'm really keen to keep exploring that just right after this short break. So just building on what Judy was saying before the break there, my parents are both kind of in the MDT but not doctors, and my nana was a midwife, Anna. Like, I'm a first in family doctor, so actually I think in medical school, even to date, I think I ring a lot more true to what Sam was saying about, like, being scared of doctors, especially senior doctors. And then I feel like I'm kind of in this weird in-between of what Judy was saying about the midwives and the nurses being, like, not liking medics or not trusting them. But I think that was kind of why I was so keen to do this episode, because I think it doesn't come from any basis in reality. I think in practice we all probably feel the same, and it's not that we actually do dislike or distrust each other. It's just this, like, fear of the unknown.
I was going to mention, I had a conversation with some other students in different universities in the UK, and they have classes with other MDT members oftentimes, and if they're having a specific sort of, if they're doing like gynecology or if they're doing anything to do with obstetrics, they would oftentimes be with the midwifery students, or if they're doing any other sort of specialties, they might be with other students who are working on that specific specialty, and they always sort of have said to me that they really enjoyed it, and I think it's a really good way to kind of bridge the gap there and, like, have that experience and also another, like, more chances to make, like, friends outside of your specific career as well.
But also have that shared, like, common language then, wouldn't they? They've learned the same material, they're in the same lectures, having the same discussions, but have a far better kind of appreciation of the other person's knowledge and training. And that's a really good idea.
I actually, I found out recently that midwives work more with pregnant women than with babies. And I was very surprised, because I think my perception of midwifery was just babies. But I think I was told, you know, like, we spend a lot of time with the pregnant people. And I was just like, wow, like, this is such a misconception that I have had. And it's just from, like, having this, like, conversation that it, like, really kind of, like, helped me to make a better image of what different healthcare professionals actually do.
Yeah, there's so many misconceptions about, you know, I'm sure physios get landed with, oh, you just, you know, help people walk, and, you know, ours is, oh, you help people with a stammer, and there's so many sort of simplifications out there. I probably thought the same of midwives before I had my own children.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, because it's kind of going back to what you were saying about media portrayal. I think everyone has an idea in their head of what a doctor does, and, you know, that may be close to the truth, may not be close to the truth, but people know what a doctor is, you know. But I think it's sometimes harder with some of the allied health professions that aren't as well represented, and kind of explaining exactly what it is that you do, particularly if you're then sort of specialised or subspecialised within that profession. And it's interesting, because it's I do a lot of, like, mentoring through the Social Mobility Foundation and various other things, and the first conversation I always have with my mentees is, right, what other things have you looked at apart from medicine? And that's not to put them off from medicine, it's just to make them aware, because I think a lot of people aren't, of the sheer range of you know, professions that are out there and contribute to the MDT and involve working in hospitals and involve caring for people, which is a lot of the reasons why people want to be doctors. And, you know, also make, you know, just making sure that they have that awareness and there might be something out there that you might prefer to do than doing medicine, something that suits you better. And I don't think it should be taboo to have that conversation with people who are interested in medical school, because really they should be looking at multiple things before they decide that wanting to be a doctor is for them, because it's not for everyone. And there's lots of other things that you can do. So it's quite interesting, really. I wonder if there needs to be, I think there have been some like NHS social media campaigns, but I'm not sure how well they've taken, I guess. Yeah.
We do get asked to go along to kind of, I can't remember the name of the group that do it, but it's an NHS affiliated group who ask for NHS professionals to go into high schools and run career days and talk about jobs and things. And I think whenever I get, you know, onto the topic of what my job actually entails, people are really surprised, because there is this perception that we just work with speech and we just work with children who might not be able to say their P sounds properly. And then you sort of, the breadth of what our profession does is enormous. And people are always shocked by, you know, the niche that you end up in somehow. It's funny what you're saying about, you know, what else have you looked at? Because I actually landed in speech therapy by chance. I had never heard of it before myself. And I failed out of another university degree. I was trying to get into veterinary science and didn't have the grades basically to get into the professional part of the course. And my university careers advisor said, you know, what are your interests? And I said, well, I like medicine, I like science, and I like language. And she said, well, why don't you study speech therapy? And I was like, well, I don't know what that is. And that was basically what sort of set me on that course. If I said to you, know, orthoptists, what does an orthoptist do? They're one of our allied health professionals. I probably couldn't tell you myself. You know, there's so many people out there that have these really, really specialist roles. And I think it would be great to see a little bit more kind of crossover between us all. You know, we need a better appreciation of what doctor's training entails and where you guys are at, and because your training's so different from what we do. I mean, I get continually confused between the F1, F2, SHO, registrar, ST1,
I think
ST2,
everyone else does as well.
It's just lots and lots of numbers.
Yeah.
I feel like we come out of our training with a professional degree and we start our roles and we sort of crack on, whereas you guys are just in continual training and you have a very different career trajectory to most AHPs, I think. And I feel like there's that better shared understanding would lead to better working relationships, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is definitely something that I've noticed in my new job, because I've wanted to do obs and gynae since I started medical school. Not that it was like, I wasn't super, super set on it, but I knew that that was where one of my interests, and I explored it more throughout medical school. And I knew by the time I'd finished medical school that I'd be doing my foundation rotations and then applying for specialty training in obstetrics and gynecology. And some of the midwives are absolutely horrified that I've had to do all these other jobs before I came into obs and gynae. And they're like, oh, I can't believe that they make you do this. and obviously there's a reason for it. And I do, obviously learned tons during my foundation years, but definitely towards the end of F2, I was like, what? I just want to be with, you know, in on labor ward, because I didn't get to do obs and gynae at all in foundation.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah, so it was definitely good to have more understanding of, you know, how people get into that, because I think something that I find really interesting about particularly nursing and midwifery, from because those are the professions I've had most contact with, is the range of experiences people have had before as well. So increasingly in medicine, people go in as a graduate and have done lots of interesting and cool things. I'm not to underplay that, but I think often people come to nursing or midwifery maybe potentially a little bit later in life. And I think that's really nice as well, because it does bring a huge amount of diversity and different ideas and different life experiences into healthcare, which I think is really, really important.
Yeah, definitely. I think I see that with some of our kind of mature students coming through into speech therapy, particularly, you know, they've got a whole range of different life experiences and perspectives and a resilience sometimes as well, that maybe some of the younger students are maybe still, you know, developing. I think coming into a head and neck cancer kind of team can be very confronting. I was reflecting a little bit on some of the students, but also the junior doctors we've had come through our team in the last kind of 3 to 4 years. And I was sort of thinking to myself, what would it have been like for them? And one of the, I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on this, all of you, but one of the things I think really disadvantages junior doctors in particular is the short duration of the rotations that you end up doing. You know, 4 months goes by in a flash. and from our side, from the kind of MDT side, there's that frustration that you get to know somebody, they become a useful working member of the team, you get to know them on a personal level, you start forming friendships, they learn the skills that they need to kind of operate effectively within the team, and then they're kind of yanked off to their next job
to start it all over again.
From our perspective it's frustrating. From the junior doctor's perspective it must be even more so. I've moved jobs quite a lot. You know, I've done a lot of fixed term contracts in my career, and it's always taken me at least 6 months to feel part of a team and to know the kind of ins and outs of how things work. And I just think 4 months is such a short period of time to integrate into a really established multidisciplinary team.
We talked a lot about this in last week's episode, basically about how it's not a great system. but basically also about how varied experiences can be. Like, you can have 4 months in a team where, you know, you're included and you're valued, and even though you're very junior, that you're encouraged to learn, and the different professions within a team get on well and work well together, and then how the opposite can also be true. There is a balance to be struck between, like, allowing medics to learn all of medicine and surgery and to see different teams. I mean, in medical school, our rotations are only 6 weeks, so you don't really get anything there. Like, you've just kind of settled in and found the canteen and everything, and then you're sent on to the next place. So.
Yeah, in fairness, like, when we have medical students in my specialty, now I often say to them, it's just about getting the flavour of what it's like. Just feel the vibes. Like, I wouldn't say that you need to try and learn anything specific outside of, you know, the clinical skills that you need to get signed off, unless you're really interested, obviously. But it's often not enough time. And I think I've really realised this now. I'm in my current placement for a year, so I'm coming up to nearly 6 months, and it's been a completely different experience from having that rotational experience in foundation. And I'm finally feeling comfortable in this team, and now I know that people sort of trust me more, they understand where my strengths and weaknesses are, they know that they can rely on me to do what I say I'm going to do. And it means that you then get more opportunities to learn. And I think that is the nice thing about being in specialty training. The expectations, I think, are a little bit different as well. And it must be quite confronting when you're in an established team to have these people come in and you're not sure of what they've done before. You're not sure what their experiences are. You're not sure what you can trust them to do from the word go. And you have to spend some time figuring out, like, where that person's at, both for themselves and for the team, to feel that they're able to put their trust in that person. And it must be really tricky for established teams to have us junior doctors coming in and out and maybe making waves when there weren't any. And, you know, sometimes placements work out and sometimes they don't. And
I think, yeah, I was thinking back to a couple of junior doctors that we had. It's very interesting because you can see the mark that the culture of another team leaves on somebody, I think. And you can really, even when you introduce yourself to somebody and you tell them your profession, the way that they react and the way that they then sort of interact with you on the ward tells you a lot about how they've, you know, what experiences they've had in the past, what teams they've worked with, whether your profession was respected in that team previously. We have some junior doctors come from teams where speech therapy perhaps isn't such a large part of the MDT or not respected. You sort of see that in the way that they come into the head and neck rotation and they expect to keep working like that. And it can be very, very difficult to then sort of say, no, hold on, in this team, this is how we do it. And we actually get a real stare from our consultants, who are fantastic, and they are very, very good at backing us up and saying, no, in this team, for this part of the patient's pathway, you know, we involve our MDT colleagues, they've got this expertise, they take care of this part of the pathway, for example. So it is, you never know what you're going to get. And it's that kind of that changeover day is always a bit nerve-wracking for, like you say, for the established team. We don't know who we're going to be working with or what kind of prejudices or attitudes they're going to carry in. I think everyone's sort of trying to get a read on each other in that first couple of weeks. And like you say, seeing, are they responsive to bleeps? Are they responsive to emails? You know, we always offer kind of like a face-to-face induction. So myself and the dietitian will say to the junior doctors, you know, come and sit down with us. We'll talk you through kind of what we do. We'll explain some of the lingo. We'll explain some of the, you know, more niche things.
Yeah. Just in terms of what we mean when we say MDT, Julie, I'd be interested to know if you've been to any multidisciplinary team meetings as part of your training, because I think certainly I had been to very few at medical school, and that was a really new experience for me, like attending MDT meetings, like particularly in ENT, and occasionally when I was in a general surgical F1, and now, you know, attending sort of clinical governance meetings where there are all members of the MDT who work within obstetrics and gynecology. So yeah, I'd be interested to hear your experiences.
I'm so excited that you asked that question, Anna. I think we should definitely discuss that more and talk a little bit about the like the MDT meetings that you have been a part of kind of throughout your training, but that'll be after this short break. Yeah, Anna, tell us a little bit about the MDT meetings that you've been a part of and how they've kind of been different than the, I guess, lack thereof throughout medical school.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being allocated to go to some MDTs when I was my medical training sort of fell apart is probably too strong of a word, but towards the end because it was COVID. So everything sort of was all a bit different and, you know, things weren't happening in the way that they were supposed to. But I remember when I was in third year going to some MDT meetings, neurology MDT meetings. I didn't have a clue what was going on. I just sat at the back, like with a little smile on my face, like just pleased to be here. But yes, I went to some MDT meetings when I was working in ENT, not really to contribute, more to observe, like, because often you would have a patient that needs to be referred to an MDT, you'd refer them to the MDT, and it's a bit like the MDT meeting is a bit like the kidney, right? Like there's something complicated goes on inside there and then you get a decision out, but you're not really sure how that actually works. So it was really interesting to me to go to these MDT meetings. And I think it really helped, particularly in ENT, where I think there were more members of the team than I was potentially used to working with, and their scope of practice, given that I had minimal contact with these professions, you know, in the past, was perhaps not quite clear to me. It was really nice to go and sort of find out about everyone's expertise. And we often had oncology colleagues as well. So thinking about if someone was going to have a surgery and then some like adjuvant chemotherapy or radiotherapy. But it was all people that you never met before. And you're like, I would like recommend it for if you get the opportunity as a medical student just to go and observe. But it's interesting to know how those decisions get made, particularly those really high level complex decision making. It's something that I think you don't get a lot of exposure to as a junior doctor as well, because you're often so focused on guidelines, which is totally appropriate. And we've had this, we've talked about this on the podcast before, that when you're junior and you're not as confident in that high level decision making because you don't have that experience, you do rely a lot on guidelines, and that's totally appropriate. But you also need to be sort of looking ahead to the fact that one day, potentially, if you want to, you will be a consultant and you will be, you know, trying to work in the team to make these decisions. And sometimes that's really, really complicated and people have disagreements. And I think it was one of the, I don't think I'd ever really been exposed to consultants and other members of the team having serious disagreements about patients' care before I was actually qualified. Like I was just toddling around medical school like, oh, isn't this lovely, like everyone's getting great care and it's brilliant. So, and when you have that experience for the first time, and I think a lot of people had this during COVID when nobody knew what to do, when you have that experience for the first time and you're like, oh, there's no answer here, like there's no right or wrong here, like either of these you know, potentially multiple options would probably be like result in an acceptable outcome. But it's like, what things are you prioritizing? And yeah, that complex decision making is really, really difficult. But I think there's an expectation that we learn how to do it in medicine and not maybe that much support for it. So yeah, in summary, go to an MGT meeting. It's quite cool.
Oh, I was just going to say, I have always kind of, where I've had the opportunity to, gone to them. It's because I come from a background where I've been around MDT members, and I'm just really interested in like hearing perspectives different to my own, and like, I guess, the meeting of expertise that comes into making those decisions, because it's not formally taught in medical school, as we've well covered today, but I don't think it could be. I think the best way to learn is by observing them, and I think you learn so much about not just clinical stuff, but like team dynamics and like what works in MDT meetings and what ways of communicating don't work. And it is, as a medical student, you're useless for the MDT. You're doing nothing there except sitting and drinking tea. But for us, it is, well, for me anyway, I found it to be a very valuable learning experience. I also really care about kind of social causation and like the social side of healthcare. A lot of places where I've had placement are places where that's particularly pertinent to patients. So seeing those factors considered in a way that my own profession really like plays less of a role in is something that really interests me. So yeah, it's entirely for my own gain that I've gone to those meetings, but I've learned so much from them, and I would recommend that, like, no matter what you like, I mean, placement's your choice, but I've always had a good experience. Judy, what do you make of all this?
I think it's really interesting. I've never been to an MDT meeting, but after hearing you guys, I definitely will try to have, you know, a chance to go, mostly because at the moment I'm in fourth year, so I'm just on the cusp of starting clinical rotations. So I'm hoping that we have like an access to that, just to be able to observe and see how much like we could learn. In terms of MDT, like sort of just the idea of having multiple people coming together to make decisions for the best of the patients. I think the only time I've encountered anything similar to that is it had to do with safeguarding of children and like the law aspect. So we were looking at potentially teachers and then social workers and then every different sort of everyone that had access to the children and had like knowledge about the child would come in this like meeting. I think it was the family court or something like that, and give their view on how, like, what would be best for the children. So I'm imagining it might be quite similar to, in an MDT meeting. And then even in terms of MDT, I wasn't very familiar with the term MDT. I wasn't sure what it meant. I had to search upon Google to see that it meant multidisciplinary team, which I have heard of before. So it's definitely something that I am looking forward to sort of observing in the future, because one thing I love about medicine is the sort of joining together of many different aspects of life. And I think that's what really made me excited about being a doctor. So being able to see that like in person is really exciting. So I really do look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I think thinking on what Anna was saying and what you were saying about going to MDTs, my suggestion would be to go to as many as you can in the hope that you would catch a really good one and a really bad one. Because I think the contrast in seeing a really bad one versus a really good one is very educational in what you were saying about what it takes for a good multidisciplinary team to communicate with each other. I mean, I'm very fortunate to work with a team at the moment with some incredibly gifted communicators. We have a couple of oncology consultants in particular who are the most incredible communicators I've ever met, and I watch them in these meetings and I just marvel at the way that they can, you know, have engaged conversations, and they can have a conflicting opinion, but they can resolve it in these meetings in a kind of productive way. And then you go to another one, maybe in a less functional team, and you see what bad communication looks like. You see what it looks like to railroad somebody. You know what it looks like to have a consultant, for example, who maybe just makes all the decisions and doesn't really want to collaborate at all. And you can learn a lot. It might not matter so much about which specialty it is that you're observing. It might be more about the dynamics in the team and how they communicate with each other and how they do resolve a difference of opinion.
And what we have a lot in OBS and gynae, I mean, particularly obstetrics, is we have they're called risk meetings, basically, and they're sort of after the fact, obviously, because sometimes things evolve so quickly that you don't have time to have that collaborative decision making, particularly in obstetrics. So those cases are reviewed afterwards, and all of the sort of information, like from the notes and any blood results or whatever, scans, CTGs, which is like the tracing of the baby's heart, are all reviewed with multiple consultants and senior midwives and sometimes staff who are involved. And that's also really interesting. And I would agree that I've had various experiences going to those meetings, which are very interesting to watch as a junior. And I think definitely vary from department to department as well, depending on departmental culture, which, you know, in my specialty is something that has been much discussed, and I think efforts have been made to improve culture in maternity, but I suspect that efforts will need to continue to be made. I work in a really lovely department. I'm going to say that now. It's brilliant. but I know that there are other departments that are not quite as lovely as the one that I work in. So yeah, it's really interesting about the sort of that communication and workplace culture is super important.
It has so much to answer for, doesn't it? You can put up with a lot if you've got a good team. You know, if you're on placement and you have a particular interest in observing a member of the multidisciplinary team, to absolutely ask if you can shadow them, or to you know, if they have a student with them, you can do a kind of swap so that that student maybe observes some of the ward round with the doctors, and the medical student goes and spends the day with the speech therapist or physio or whoever it is.
I've had the best time on place in Care of the Elderly, which was one of my favourite placements ever, and I never would have thought I would have even enjoyed it, but I loved it. I had like a morning with the integrated therapies team, which was physio and OT together, and I had a morning with speech and language therapy, had a morning with the pharmacist, and there were like MDTs every week, and it was just so, it was what I was saying before about the holistic care. Like, you could really see them looking after the whole patient, and it's all great if someone's medically fit for discharge, but if they can't like eat independently or can't swallow their food right, or if they can't like mobilize in their home, that's all for nothing. There really isn't that education within any of our individual professions curriculum to to fully give due to that, if that makes sense.
Actually, when I went on to my GP placement when I was an F2, I had 2 weeks that were completely shadowing, and I shadowed everyone. Like, I shadowed everyone from the receptionists, who were totally baffled as to why I was sat there with them. They were like, "Do you want to go home? Like, no, I'll stay for an hour, because that's what I'm supposed to be doing." Because obviously you can only hear one end of the conversations as well, because you're not sort of tapped in. So I was like, this is a bit strange for them, for me to just be sat here, like, not really doing anything. But yeah, I went around everyone. I sat with the nurse practitioner. I sat with the healthcare assistant who did all the diabetes checks and things like that. It was great. And then the nice thing about it as well was not just having the awareness of what their roles were, but actually meeting them. Because in a GP setting, it's so important. It was a really tiny practice as well, actually. I only had three GPs and couple of nurse practitioners and stuff, and even had a lovely chat with the community midwife who I obviously made a beeline for, because I was like, I'm doing it. But I think when I was at medical school, I did go to some midwifery antenatal clinics, but I didn't have the opportunity to shadow a midwife in hospital, but I know that the midwives in my trust have third year students from both Newcastle and Sunderland, and they'll shadow them for a whole day, which I think is really cool. Yeah,
I think that's all that we have time for today. Thank you so much to our panelists for joining us and to everyone at home for listening to this episode of Sharp Scratch. If you like our show, I would love it if you could support us by leaving a review wherever you get your podcasts or by sharing it with the people that you know. Tell your friends about it, because that really helps people to find the show. Please do keep in touch. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the show, especially your own experiences of working with the MDT or learning about them. You can find us on social media. We are BMJ Student on Twitter, X and Instagram. If you'd like to hear other episodes, please do subscribe to Sharp Scratch wherever you get your podcasts. And in 2 weeks' time, you'll be notified of our next episode. Until then, it is goodbye from us.